Louis DiBiase.
Wentz, man 5 and 1, spins away, under pressure, still on his feet. Now he fires downfield, and it's caught by Nelson Aguilar for an Eagles touchdown.
Geno Camilleri.
Going for it all into the end zone, and it is caught. Alshon Jeffrey for the touchdown.
You are listening to the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, Eagles fans, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, available as always on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Lou DiBiase here in studio alongside Geno Camilleri. Geno, what's going on, man?
I'm much as happy to be in first place in the NFC East right now.
Absolutely. I mean, even though the Redskins won, I mean, they played a Cardinals team starred by Sam Bradford. Does that even really count?
So. No, they played a team. There were guys on the field that they played against, but absolutely, they're not very good.
Coming to you today, Tuesday, September 11th, 2018, and we are moving on from the Atlanta Falcons win on Thursday night as the Eagles got an 18-12 victory week one. They are 1-0. It was a sloppy one. It was a gritty one. It was scary. And I think, Geno, we don't have to worry about Atlanta for the time being. I'm done. We talked about it in the recap. I've had enough of seeing Atlanta, and I'm ready to take on some different teams and hopefully blow a team out for once, because those kind of games are fun to watch, but they are nerve-wracking to the finish.
Yeah, they're fun when it's like a college game on a Saturday night and you have nothing to do the next Sunday, but when right. It's a Thursday and you got to get up for work the next day, it's not good for your nerves. But yeah, I always say Atlanta and Carolina are the two teams I hate playing because they always play us well. You can look back to that Carolina game last year on the Thursday as well. That was a hell of a game, and we got to play them again this year. So we're on to a different NFC South team this week.
Sticking in the South as the Eagles take on Tampa Bay this Sunday at 1 o'clock, and that's what we're moving on to today. So coming up on the show, Doug Peterson is going to announce the starting quarterback tomorrow. And that is according to offensive coordinator Mike Groh. So it came from Groh that Peterson will announce it on Wednesday. The quarterbacks do know who's going to be under center, so we're going to get into that. And then we're going to take a first look at this matchup with Tampa Bay, who surprisingly is at 1-0. Geno, they were the survival pool wreckers of week one. They were the reason my fantasy team got wrecked, as I started the Saints defense with minus 10 points.
Drew Brees put up 97 points against me.
Right. Oh, that's insane. Ryan Fitzpatrick throws for over 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. So this is a team that, when you're looking at the schedule, this is one of the gimme games, it seemed like. Because when I was talking about it during the offseason, talking about how stacked the NFC is, the one team I was saying probably doesn't have a realistic chance of making the playoffs was Tampa Bay. And now it seems like Arizona is one of those teams as well. But Tampa Bay was one of the teams that I was thinking they're in a loaded division with three potential Super Bowl contenders. Jameis Winston suspended for 2 games. I don't really even like Jameis Winston even when he's playing. You know, and Dirk Cutter is not very inspiring as your head coach, and yet suddenly they're 1-0, and they took down the team that a lot of people are picking to win the Super Bowl, including myself and the New Orleans Saints. If you saw, shameless plug, our NFL final predictions on LockedOnEagles.com, go check those out. Me and Geno predicted it. Who did you have ended up winning the – did you have the Birds winning it all?
Oh, of course.
Of course. You had the repeat, which is it's fair, and it seems like, I mean, after beating Atlanta, they should still be the favorite in the NFC. But, yeah, this is a Tampa Bay team that suddenly looks like a tougher matchup as the Eagles are going down to Tampa Bay, so they're on the road, and it's not a hostile environment, but a road game is always tougher than playing at the Link. I mean, we saw the advantage that the Eagles have when they're playing at the Link every single time. So we're going to get into that on the offensive side of the ball. Can the offense bounce back after a lackluster performance against the Falcons? And then on the defensive side, Tampa Bay put up 48 points against that Saints defense. The Eagles hold a Falcons offense that's one of the best in the league to 12 points. So we're going to get into that matchup as well. That's all coming up right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. But let's first get into our quarterback update. It's the talk of the town. It's going to be until Carson Wentz comes back. And it looks like, I mean, right now, Foles, I would still say, is the favorite to start against Tampa Bay. But them not announcing it yet, you mentioned this before the show, it leaves it up in the air, especially with Chris Mortensen's report the other day that Carson Wentz has not been ruled out for week two, and that contradicts Ian Rappaport's report that Wentz is still going to be out for several weeks and it might not return. Maybe the earliest is week three. So this is interesting, and man, it's going to be exciting if Carson Wentz is named the starter tomorrow, because I went back and watched the film against the Falcons and saw a lot, and we're going to get into it in the second segment more about the Eagles' offense, but there were a lot of plays left that I'm watching and saying, man, if Carson Wentz is in that play, that is a touchdown, or that's a big play instead of a six-yard reception, you know, two-way receiver. And I'm just thinking, the Eagles, we saw the Super Bowl win with Nick Foles, but how exciting Carson Wentz was, we've missed that since he went down against the Rams. And I just, the sooner we can get him back, the better, just because he is so polarizing and so exciting on the offensive side. And it's a test against Tampa Bay, an offense that I think would be a good start. But I still think it's going to be Foles, but this is, we'll see. I mean, Mortensen said Wentz has not been ruled out yet. He looked close week one. Maybe Wentz does play against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Mike Garofalo said today that he could be a couple more weeks. These reports are all over the board. Who knows what to believe? I mushed Carson Wentz before the season, so I'm going to say Nick Foles is starting. So hopefully I do a reverse mush and we get to see Carson Wentz out there. I would love it. But I'm not going to be optimistic. I do like Foles when he has continuity, when he has a couple games to get into a rhythm. And that Falcons defense is no pushover by any stretch of the imagination. They could be one of the fastest defenses I've ever seen play. I feel like all those guys can run like a sub 4.740. They're phenomenal. But yeah, I mean, they know in house who's starting. We'll find out tomorrow. But I'm gonna go with the reverse mush and say Nick Foles. Let's hope he's under center on Sunday.
So my logic to this is, and look, if the Eagles are winning football games and Nick Foles is playing well, they go Tampa Bay, Indianapolis, and Tennessee. The Eagles, realistically, without Wentz, could run the table there and go 4-0. That's a very realistic possibility that the Eagles, or at least heading into that Minnesota game at 3-1. You made the point, though, before the show that you don't want to throw Wentz in straight up against Minnesota as that first game. So to me, if you can get another couple wins and buy Wentz, because my logic is if you're going to play Wentz in the first month of the season, you might as well do it sooner than later and get him into the mold, knock off the rust, so then when he plays the better teams later on in the season when the schedule gets harder, that rust is already knocked off. Because waiting 1 week to another is only really going to increase the percentage chance of a non-re-rupture by 5-10%. Maybe even that might be an overstatement. So if you're going to hold him out for a significant amount of time, then you should at least keep him out the first month, maybe even more. But clearly, since the decision has not been made yet for week two, they're trying to get Carson Wentz on the field when the doctors clear him and as soon as possible. So if that's the case, I want him out here sooner rather than later. I still think it's going to be Foles for the next couple weeks because it strengthens the ACL a little bit more, and I think that they want to, and they can still realistically get him that game against Tennessee, against a very vulnerable Titans team that their defense didn't look good against a Dolphins offense that I don't really think has a lot of talent on it. And,
not at all.
I mean, the ghost of Frank Gore continues to gash them in that week one game, and the offense doesn't have Delanie Walker now for the season. They don't have Taylor Lewan right now. Marcus Mariota's banged up. So ideally, maybe you can still get... So I'm kind of hoping for the best of both worlds, where Wentz still gets us a couple more wins, but Wentz still gets... Or Foles gets a couple more wins, and Wentz still gets that warm-up game, or maybe one or two of them before Minnesota. Because, again, you don't want him probably playing against Minnesota as his first game.
Yeah, not after we knocked them out of the Super Bowl. Right. We completely embarrassed them.
They're going to be extra motivated.
They're going to be motivated. Yeah. And if you don't think they're going to be swinging for Carson Wentz's lower half of his body, you're out of your mind. But yeah, I'd be okay with getting him in there in that Indy game. I think that's like a realistic possibility. That's what Mortensen mentioned. I think that'd be a good test. Their defense is just Swiss cheese, really. I mean, there's no other way to put it. They don't have much talent there, but
they haven't for a long time.
Not for a long time. But yeah, the worst case scenario is waiting until that Minnesota game, I feel. It's just going to be...
If I'm waiting up until that point, I'll wait a couple more weeks.
Yeah, just keep him out until the bye at that point. Yeah, like, if you're not going to get him in week three or four, I would say just hold him out until the bye, because there's going to be no use in getting... Just let Foles play it out. Let him go over the pond. Let him play. But, yeah, I think week three, idealistically, going against Frank Reich and the Indianapolis Colts would be good. It's at home.
I think that's the realistic
return. You're going to have a crowd on your side. Think
probably
Carson
start him off in a home game.
Yeah, exactly. Get his juices flowing a little bit and... hopefully get him back into the MVP caliber form that he was in last year.
For me, it's get him back before the Minnesota game or after.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I agree.
Let's get him back. If we're gonna play him, if we're getting ready, in which that clearly seems like the route, then you're going to play him in the first couple weeks of the year. If not, then, again, we talked with Randon Hall on the podcast a couple weeks ago, or about a week right before the season started, talking about, is there really a positive advantage to holding Wentz out for a week or two? And there really isn't. It's, if you wait a month or two, that will significantly decrease the risk. So that's where I'm at with this. And look, the Eagles, they got the biggest test out of the way against Atlanta. They got that win without Carson Wentz. And if Foles can get this win against Tampa Bay, it sets Carson Wentz up for a 2-0 team to take on, a bad defense that Andy Dalton tore up last week. And I think that's ideal, is that Wentz comes back with an easy matchup against either the Colts or the Tennessee Titans. But again, if the doctors clear him this week, I'm not going to complain if Carson Wentz is playing. I've missed the guy. I've missed watching him play football, and I want him to get back on to where he left off in 2017 and set this league on fire once again.
Yeah, so I want him to get that MVP, hopefully this year.
100%. He should have had it last year, and it's a redemption tour. Not just comeback player of the year. I want him to win NFL MVP. Coming up on the Lockdown Eagles podcast, we're going to get into the matchup with Tampa Bay this week. You know, we're talking about Wentz and when he's coming back, but the Eagles have another game to play this week with or without Carson Wentz against the 1-0 Buccaneers. We're going to get into the offensive side. Can the Eagles offense bounce back against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense that got torn to shreds by Drew Brees week one?
Yeah, you know what? The Eagles still not getting any respect, so, you know.
That's true. It's still the underdogs.
Yeah, it's still the underdogs. They're only given 3 points this week. And, you know, ever since I started working at this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week. I wouldn't recommend any of my advice because I'm not that great at it. But the truth is, I don't know who's going to win clearly. But if you know, you got to check out my bookie. Remember, you're betting on is more who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with my bookie. I use my bookie. I'm pretty sure Lou uses my bookie. So trust me, guys, they are the best in the business. And bet there this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. You can lay down some cash each week and win big. You can lay as little as 10, or if you want to get real big and lay some big cash, hopefully you come out a winner. But I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. I've been using it for a couple years now, and that's why I'm urging you to go out of your way and use MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each week.
I don't know if I'm going to do that anymore.
Yeah, Drew Brees, take the over every week.
That's
you know?
Right.
So join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Free money. What's better than that? Use promo code LOCKDOWN to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use promo code LOCKDOWN when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back into the Lockdown Eagles podcast, everybody. On the Lockdown Podcast Network, your team every day. Let's get into the second segment of this show, and let's get into the matchup against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This time, we're talking offense against the Buccaneers defense. We'll get into Fitzpatrick and how he lit the Saints on fire, and we'll get into how the Eagles defense stops them. But first, we got to get into this offense, Gino, because the defense for the Eagles, that's not the side of the ball I'm worried about. They are the reason the Eagles beat the Falcons on Thursday Night Football, whereas the offense, the run game got going in the second half, but the passing game never found their rhythm. Zach Ertz had 3 drops in that game. Mike Wallace wasn't getting the ball, partially because Nick Foles left a lot of plays in the field. He wasn't finding Dallas Goedert a whole lot. He was really just going to Nelson Aguilar in the short term, and the offense was very conservative, and they were held back. They were still rusty, and it didn't seem like, and I shouldn't say the entire thing, because I thought the running backs played well, and I thought the offensive line played really well. Really, who I'm talking about is Nick Foles, because I went back and I watched the film against that Falcons team, and there were, again, a lot of plays that Nick Foles left on the field where it was a 6-yard reception, it was incomplete, and it could have been a 14-yard catch or a deep bomb where the Eagles had an opportunity to score. So I've seen a lot of people on Twitter talk about this week, should there be concern about the Eagles' offensive weapons? You know, they brought in Braxton Miller this week until Alshon Jeffrey comes back. Are we concerned about the Eagles' weapons? To me, I still say no. I mean, it's not ideal that DeAndre Carter is playing 74% of your snaps, which was surprising. I thought Sheldon Gibson was going to get those snaps, totally thrown off that he played so much against Atlanta. But, you know, the offensive weapons is not what's concerning to me after watching the film. It was Nick Foles, because Mike Wallace, 0 catches, right? Dallas Goedert had only 2, didn't get that touchdown. He got hit out of bounds. He had that fumble after catching it, but that pass really to Carson Wentz. It was late, or Nick Foles, because Carson Wentz probably doesn't make that pass. Nick Foles, it was a late pass. Goddard gets hit across the middle, fumbles the ball. Those, both of those guys, ideally, if Foles has a better game, they both have bigger weeks, and we're talking differently about Mike Wallace and Dallas Goedert. We're not talking about, is Mike Wallace just another Torrey Smith, as he washed up. There were a lot of times that plays were left on the field, and it was really because of Foles. Did the other guys not get open a whole lot? Yeah, there were times where there were coverage sacks, and Foles just had to dump it off or throw it away or force stuff because the receivers weren't gaining a whole lot of separation. But the majority of the time, even when Foles had a clean pocket, he just wasn't seeing the right reads. He was making the wrong decisions, and he was staring down players like I do in Madden football, or like Nathan Peterman seems like he's doing for the Buffalo Bills. That's really what it seemed like with Foles.
Even,
Foles was not going through his progressions, and he just seemed like he was predetermining where he was going with the ball before he even snapped it.
Yeah, that Atlanta Falcons defense, though, is out of this world.
Yeah, it is
exponentially better
than Tampa. It was one of the top with, I mean, they lost two of their best players, but it's a lot better than Tampa Bay.
Let's just go through the secondary of Tampa Bay real quick. Vernon Hargreaves, former first round pick, he's had an up and down career so far. Brent Grimes, he's on the wrong side of 30 now, he's getting up there. Chris Conte, just a middle of the road guy, and same with Justin Evans. That's a lot farther from Trufant and Keanu Neal and Devon Kazee and all the guys on Atlanta. So I think he's going to have a little easier time now.
I agree.
You do want to see those receivers continue to get separation and him to go through his progressions. Hopefully that offensive line holds up again like they did last game. Give him a couple more seconds to go through his progressions. I'm sure Doug is harping on that this week. I'm sure when they looked at the tape and saw how open Mike Wallace was a lot of the time that they're going to look for that. Hopefully they can utilize Zach Ertz in a better fashion than they did last game. Hopefully expose that middle of the field. They didn't really take advantage of that too much.
I expect them maybe to use more two tight end sets. They didn't really do that a whole lot against Atlanta. I mean, Goddard played a good amount, but DeAndre Carter played the majority of the time despite, I mean, never playing in an NFL regular season game before.
Yeah, you need to get those guys out there that have good hands, and you don't want to rely on DeAndre Carter, who's barely made the roster to be your one of your top receivers. You know,
are you expecting a bounce back game? I mean, I think this is
I do.
I mean, the tape was pretty bad. Again, there were plays where Foles, you know, he wasn't picking up. There was a time where Lane Johnson pointed out a blitz, and Nick Foles just didn't see it, didn't change the protection. Darren Sproles ends up still covering the middle in his pass protection. Foles misses the quick out to Mike Wallace. And it's a play where Carson Wentz, he recognizes that. He gets it to the right read. He maybe even escapes. And there's another time I was telling you before the show, on a two-minute drill, Foles had Aguilar one-on-one down the field, and it was back to that predetermining where he was going with the football. He stared down a deep comeback from Zach Ertz the entire way, and Ertz was never open. Meanwhile, it's single coverage man-on-man with the safety in the middle. Aguilar has a lot of separation from Alford. Foles could have gave him a chance on the ball, and he just didn't do it. So the tape doesn't look good, but the tape also doesn't look good for this Tampa Bay defense. Drew Brees had his way with that secondary. The offensive line gave him time. He got the ball out quick in quick passes and also deep down the field. Someone like Ted Ginn, who's similar to Mike Wallace, he had a day, 68 yards and a touchdown. Michael Thomas had a day. Alvin Kamara had over 100 yards in the receiving game. This is the bounce back game if you're going to have one for this offense. To me, if the Eagles offense is going to get back into a rhythm, it's got to be against, I mean, the next couple weeks are pretty easy too, but this is the start against, again, a Buccaneers secondary that even you said was pretty bad in the first game.
Yeah, and I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here, and you're harping on the passing game here, and I think the key is this run game to get established, because they really shut down Kamara in the run game. I know that Kamara isn't that every down back like Mark Ingram is.
He had 28 rushing yards, 28 or 29.
But if you can't get Ajayi and you can't get Corey Clement and you can't get Sproles going, they can just drop those guys into coverage and just shut down everything, really. I mean, Nick is going to have to do better, and they're going to have to, one, have good play calling. Doug was up and down in his play calling last game, I feel. Two, they're going to have to establish that run game, hope that offensive line just dominates again. It's going to be tough. I mean, Gerald McCoy and Bo Allen, Vinny Curry and Jason Pierre-Paul, that's a hell of a front four.
No, it is.
We know what Vinny Curry can do. We know what Bo Allen
can
do.
Especially against the run. Vinny Curry is a good run defender.
He's a very good run defender.
That's probably one of his biggest strengths.
And Gerald McCoy, I would say, is the poor man's Fletcher Cox,
that's a good way to put it.
I would put him right in that third tier right underneath Aaron Donald's, let alone then Fletcher Cox, and then I would put Gerald McCoy right underneath him. You can't count those guys out from completely shutting down your run game if the offensive line has a poor game. So Hopefully they can get that established early, take advantage of that weak secondary, because I do think Tampa in the middle of the field with their linebackers, with Quan Alexander and Lavonte David, are going to be set.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can try and get Ertz into coverage on a safety and move some stuff around. But
and Ertz has to win that matchup, though, too.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I mean, those guys are going to cover him, like Deion Jones did, like Keanu Neal, mm-hmm. like Harrison Smith did in the NFC Championship game. And it's up to Ertz as the primary receiver on this offense right now with Alshon Jeffrey, and even when Alshon's back, he's probably still the go-to guy. Ertz has got to win those matchups, and he didn't do it a lot last game, and he dropped a lot of passes, so he needs to have a bounce-back game, too. You talked about the run game, but yet the Saints still put up 40 points. Like,
yeah,
this is the thing.
True.
That's how bad the Buccaneers' passing defense was, whereas, and I trust the Eagles more with the offensive line they have. It's better than the Saints' defensive line, or better than the Saints' offensive line, whereas I think that they'll have a little bit more success against in the ground attack. Because, like you said, too, Kamara's not the every-down back. He's not the between-the-tackles. I mean, he can do that. It's, mm-hmm. He still can be one of the top backs in that area. But I think Jay Ajayi, he's a lot more difficult to bring down. Mm-hmm. And you have the change. You're going to have guys stay fresh, whereas the Saints were bringing in Mike Gillisley as their second guy. The Eagles have Corey Clement, and they're going to use Darren Sproles as well. So This is going to be the game where the offense has to bounce back. Especially, it'll make you feel a lot better if they can do it with Nick Foles, because then when Carson Wentz comes back, I fully expect that offense to just go. Especially with the next couple weeks, the defenses they play, and they got to bounce back soon, because again, this schedule gets tougher and tougher. This is the easier part of the schedule, is the month of September, because then they start playing the juggernauts of the NFC. They start getting into their divisional games. This is the time now to take advantage, to get that offense going. Bring back Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, that's the other part. The Eagles don't have
people
two
forget.
Of their most dangerous people on offense, and it's Carson Wentz and Alshon Jeffrey. So I feel like, I mean, we're talking about this as a concern now. We might not be doing that Sunday if Wentz is back, or if they light him up in Tampa Bay and then Wentz and Alshon come back. It's maybe just be a weak thing that we're talking about because of Nick Foles. And the other thing is, Nick Foles is the most hot and cold quarterback we've ever seen in maybe in NFL history. So would it surprise you at all if Nick Foles throws for a Ryan Fitzpatrick-type game where he has over 300 yards and three or four touchdowns? I mean, that wouldn't shock me in the slightest.
We saw what he did the last time after he played Atlanta.
Yeah, it's just vintage Nick Foles. I mean, this is what you get with him. Extremely high highs and extremely low lows. So I think, what do you think the key matchup here, though, on the offensive side of the ball is? I mean, is it Zach Ertz against Lavonte David? Is it the Eagles' offensive line against the Buccaneers' defensive line? What do you think the key matchup in this offense is? Like, what is the one matchup we should watch for?
I think you got to go with the defensive line against our offensive line because, I mean, look at those names that they have. They have all pro Gerald McCoy, and then the other three guys with him are all good. And Vita Vea and Noah Spence, those guys are on the bench just coming off fresh. Those are huge names that people forget about. I forget about it half the time. And if you can impose your will on that and just cause hell in the run game, it's going to open up things mightily for Nick Foles to throw that ball down the field, and that's exactly what you want to do. So if
you need him to have a clean pocket.
Yes, exactly.
Foles has to thrive with a clean pocket. If it gets
muddy, he's not scrambling Carson does.
I mean, he was bad with a clean pocket last week, but majority of the time, if you keep Foles upright, he'll make plays for you. Whereas if it's muddy, I don't expect him to be able to make a lot of stuff happen in that offense.
Yeah, you definitely got it. You got to hope Jason Kelce, the interior, does well. We all know what Jason Peters and Lane Johnson do. They just impose their will on anybody. But, yeah, if you can command the run game, set it up early, work in a couple play actions, couple RPOs, get Nick in a groove, I think it could be a good day. I think the first series is going to tell a lot of how this game is going to go. If they can get it going early, I think it's going to be a Drew Brees-type game for Nick Foles.
I hate to be the mainstream media that talks about RPOs because it drove me crazy on Thursday night hearing them talk about RPOs so much, but it is a key against Tampa Bay, especially because what is the biggest strength of Tampa Bay's defense is probably the linebackers, right?
Of course.
It's their ability to be in coverage against the run, and the RPOs, it makes the linebackers hesitant. The Eagles get to decide. It really narrows in on those linebackers deciding what you're going to do based on the looks that they're giving you. So I think that is a huge part of this game, and the Eagles didn't use a lot of RPO action as much as maybe we thought on Thursday night. The Falcons actually used it more than the Eagles did, so that is also a key to this. You know, Foles is very comfortable in that style, and again, it's really the new mainstream, the new trendy way to know football is if you're talking about RPOs because of how popular the Eagles made it last year. But we are talking about the Eagles. We're not talking about another team. This is a team that focuses on that. part of the offense, and it's a multi-optional play. And that's going to be a key here against those linebackers in Tampa Bay that, mm-hmm. I mean, Atlanta had the same type of players last week, and it was probably the main reason that the Eagles' offense struggled was because of how good those Falcons linebackers were on Zach Ertz and on Dallas Goedert and just disrupting the middle of the field. And that's really, when you think about it, that's where Foles is most comfortable, I would say, is quick passes across the middle, getting it to the tight ends and to Nelson Aguilar, and that's where, you know, you went from the Falcons to the Buccaneers. They're a similar team that thrives in that same area. So this is going to be an interesting game on this side of it. I'm really watching Mike Wallace because, again, back to the film, I counted about 6 or 7 times where Foles could have went to Mike Wallace and it would have been a big play, especially the 2 deep balls mm-hmm. where the first one was in the first half. Wallace was actually being double covered. There was a safety over top him, but Foles threw him open to the right side of the field, just trusting Wallace's speed was going to split those 2 defenders, and Wallace actually did just that. Foles gets that pass higher and over the head of, I believe it was Desmond Trufant. That's a big reception that puts mm-hmm. the Eagles in field goal range, whereas Foles underthrows it. And then it was in the second half where Foles again tried to get Mike Wallace deep, and he underthrew it once again. So if they can get Mike Wallace going in this
and
as
he
well,
was definitely interfered with on
he,
that.
Oh, absolutely,
we can agree 100%. On that.
But he might not have to be interfered. I mean, if Foles leads him deeper. I mean, Foles has, you know, he's got good touch. He's got good accuracy a lot of the time. And he can throw the deep ball, but there's sometimes where he does not get into it as much as you would like
yeah,
him
always
to.
Always comes
and
against Atlanta.
It was
you
Atlanta.
Remember Torrey Smith
yeah,
last
exactly.
year? Yeah.
He has struggled with arm strength against Atlanta the past 2 times, and that was on display again. I counted about 6 or 7 times where Mike Wallace could have made a big play on it, and instead we're talking about is Mike Wallace washed up, partly because Nick Foles just couldn't find him the football. So this is going to be the most interesting side of this game, but we're going to get into the defensive side, the Eagles going up against Fitzmagic. Yes, Fitzmagic is apparently back, or maybe just for the week. We'll get into that coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, Eagles fans all across the nation and the globe, because we got people from Europe listening to us. We got a good following in Great Britain. We got some people from Australia listening
it's
to us.
To
so
hear.
Locked On Eagles spreads across the globe. And it'll be cool for those fans that are listening to the show to see Eagles-Jaguars this year as the Eagles head
Definitely.
Over to London. So that'll be cool. Football is growing. It's growing all across the country.
American football is growing.
Yes, of course. Got to make sure we talk about, specifically American football. But we're going to get into now the Eagles' defensive side of this matchup against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, going up against Ryan Fitzpatrick, a player that, again, when you say the Eagles are playing Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, it probably seems like an easy matchup that you're going to chalk up as a win. Ryan Fitzpatrick against a Saints defense that I thought was coming up. You know, they have a great young secondary. They're bringing in Davenport, you know, with Cameron Jordan on the defensive line. It seems like they have pieces on it. The defense wasn't bad last year. And in the first game at home, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tampa Bay put up 48 points. Do you think that this was a mirage? I can't possibly see Ryan Fitzpatrick repeat that performance or even scratch close to it against this Eagles defense. I am not scared in the slightest by that. I mean, that offense has weapons, but I'm not nervous about Ryan Fitzpatrick, truthfully. There's no way he is capable of putting that up 2 weeks straight.
You talk about a high-variance quarterback, and that is Ryan Fitzpatrick.
It's the battle of the high-variance quarterbacks.
Yes. Every team that Fitzpatrick has played for has seen the flashes of greatness. He did it here in Buffalo. He did it when he went to the Jets. And now he's doing it in Tampa Bay. And he always seems to find a start. He starts every year at least once a game. It's phenomenal. But power to him for having a hell of a game. But I do think it was an anomaly. Mm-hmm. I really do. One of my good friends said the Saints, their defense was an anomaly last year. Hmm. And I kind of think that too.
So maybe
they don't have a great
well.
Pass rush. You saw what they did to get Marcus Davenport. They
spent
gave up
an extra
2
first round
draft picks for a guy that was super raw coming out of the draft. Yeah. I mean, you would like to see him develop, but
maybe they're hoping he's like a Ziggy Ansah type of situation. Where
yeah,
that's a lot of capital though to bank on a raw prospect like that.
When the Bears just gave up 2 to get Khalil Mack.
Exactly,
yeah, think
exactly.
of it like that. He's
yep.
no Khalil Mack by
right.
any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, I mean, they couldn't really force a pass rush on Ryan Fitzpatrick on an offensive line that, I mean,
he had a lot of time.
Do you really hear about Tampa's offensive line being anything great? No, they're a middle of the road team, and I think Atlanta's offensive line was definitely better than Tampa's.
Oh, yes.
And
And the Eagles' defensive line got to Matt Ryan.
Yeah, they did.
Specifically Fletcher Cox and Chris Long.
Yeah, and they have Devonta Freeman, Tevin Coleman. Mm-hmm. Tampa's working with Peyton Barber. That's not a name.
And Ronald Jones, Mr. 0.8 yards per carry.
Ronald Jones. But yeah, I mean, I think Fitzpatrick, he had some crazy stat that if he doesn't throw an interception, that he's won like near 90% of his games that he's played. But if he does throw an interception, he's lost like a majority of those games. So
the majority of the games, he throws interceptions.
Throws interceptions, yeah. Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was surprised that he was so untouched. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised.
And he didn't throw an interception, which is crazy.
He had a lot of time. And if you give... Well, it wasn't just a lot about Ryan Fitzpatrick. He made a lot of throws in the money. But they have Mike Evans. DeSean Jackson looked like the DeSean Jackson of old in his days in Philadelphia, where they're lining him up in the slot, and he's taking advantage of some zone concepts and some man-on-man in the slot where the Saints just couldn't run with DeSean. And then Chris Godwin having a big game as well, and so was O.J. Howard. Tampa Bay has four guys that you have to be concerned with in the passing game. But the key, again, on this side of the ball is if you get to Ryan Fitzpatrick and he starts forcing plays, which... It's vintage Ryan Fitzpatrick, and he starts turning the football over. That's how you're going to get him. The key to this is the Eagles' front four being as disruptive as they were against Atlanta because, yeah, the secondary, they're going to have their hands full. I mean, is Darby going to stay on – I mean, Darby's going to stay on one side of the field, and so is Jalen Mills, which kind of concerns me sometimes because if they line up DeSean Jackson on Jalen Mills, they're probably going to run a lot
toast.
They're going to – I mean, with Nigel Bradham back and the matchup of DeSean maybe on Jalen Mills, I do expect a lot more two safety looks with Bradham and Jordan Hicks because I think they're going to want to keep someone over the top to watch Jalen Mills because Darby's not going to chase around DeSean Jackson, especially when they have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin as well in this offense. You're going to keep Darby on one side and let him cover if Mike Evans is on that side. You want Darby on Mike Evans, and I'd probably actually rather have Mills on Mike Evans than Mills on DeSean.
He plays well on big receivers. Yeah, big receivers,
he's a
definitely.
More aggressive corner that likes to make big hits on the on the ball, and he cannot get beat on double moves this week. If Jalen Mills, you know that play we saw against Julio Jones.
Yep.
If you do that against DeSean Jackson, you're going to get burned. We've seen that. DeSean Jackson has been the Eagle killer since 2014 when Chip Kelly traded him. He has gashed the Eagles almost every game he's played. How many big home runs have we seen him get in Washington where he ended the Eagles season in 2015, and he has been the Eagle killer. And it seems like finally, though, the Eagles do have the personnel to stop him. But on the side, I do expect the Eagles to be a little bit more cautious on Jalen Mills' side because that matchup is not ideal.
Yeah, I agree, and I think when you said Nigel Bradham being back is huge.
That's very big.
I don't even think that's an understatement. I think it's dead on the money. You can leave the two safeties high, bring Bradham down in the box. You're not relying on Malcolm Jenkins to be that weak side linebacker almost. Yeah, exactly. So I believe Sidney Jones can hold his own in the slot against either DeSean or Godwin, whoever they're going to line up there.
I mean, DeSean, his first touchdown was in the slot.
Yeah.
So we're going to need Jones on DeSean as well.
It's going to be a big game for that kid. And after what he did last game, I expect him to do well.
He had no easy test against Mohamed Sanu and
Calvin Ridley. You didn't even hear his name when he lined up in the slot. But yeah, so I do think this is the one year you can actually cover DeSean. I think him and Darby would – I'm interested to see that.
Yeah,
see that
4-3
speed, see both of those guys going at it. Darby's just been running routes for receivers in the past couple games that he's been playing. So if he's on top of his game, like I mentioned the last game, he's going to shut down anybody. Mike Evans, I pray that he's on Jalen Mills' side because I love how Jalen Mills plays on big receivers because he's a physical corner. He's not a finesse guy. He doesn't have great
closing
speed.
He's almost like a mini
speed.
Linebacker with coverage ability.
He played safety a majority of his time when he was in LSU. So,
and you always see him making plays against the run. One of his strengths is tackling.
Yeah, he did tackle really well in that game against Atlanta. I will give him that. But didn't cover Julio great. But bigger receivers, I think Jalen Mills fits that well. Mike Evans will be a very, very big test for him. I think that defensive line has to just absolutely dominate this game. And I think they're going to. You're gonna cycle in seven guys. I even saw somebody suggest that you don't scratch Josh Sweat this week just to get another body. It's going to be 90-some-odd degrees in humidity. You want to keep that line fresh. So
I like that idea.
If you can rotate four defensive ends and three, four solid defensive tackles, I think it's going to be a long day for Tampa, and you get Fitzpatrick to throw an interception, you're going to lock that game up really easy.
That yeah, it's the pass rush. They got to get there. I mean, I do. I think the Eagles' corners, they're finally ready to match up against a DeSean Jackson and a Mike
for
Evans.
For once.
For once, the first time since, you know, the days of Lito Shepard and Sheldon Brown, really. So that is probably the more – that's probably the most polarizing, most exciting matchup on paper. But if Ryan Fitzpatrick's on the ground, if he is rattled and he is forcing plays – then those corners can capitalize, and it's about that front four getting there, though. And if they're not getting there, then Fitzpatrick having time, the Eagles' corners, there were a lot of times where they gave the pass rush extra time to get to Matt Ryan.
Definitely.
But, I mean, this is a group of weapons in Tampa Bay that, again, made a Saints secondary that a lot of people think is very promising look like college players. It was... They were on full display how talented that Buccaneers offense was when we're talking about the skill positions. But it's going to be extremely interesting. It's really up to what Tampa Bay wants to do, because Jim Schwartz is not going to shadow DeSean Jackson with Ronald Darby.
That he's going to play his defense.
It would be irresponsible considering they have a Mike Evans on that offense. I mean, you're not having Darby follow DeSean. But then again, Tampa Bay might just decide, okay, then we're going to throw DeSean Jackson to Jalen Mills all day, every day. So the Eagles are going to have to, they got to keep a safety over the top of Mills pretty much 24/7 if DeSean's on that side. So I really hope that Tampa Bay rotates it around a lot, because, yeah, the ideal matchup for the Eagles is Darby on DeSean and Jalen Mills on Mike Evans. That's the preferred, because if Jalen Mills is going to cover one of them, I trust him more on Mike Evans, weirdly enough, just based on his strengths.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you look back to a couple years ago to a game that I was... Sadly, I drove 6 hours to go see them play Tampa when Mark Sanchez started. You saw what a finesse.
Is that your first game?
No, that was my second or third,
right.
But it was a bad game. I left in the third. I've never left a game early. I left in the third quarter. That was atrocious. But you see what Mike Evans can do against a corner that plays soft. He absolutely exposed Byron Maxwell, who's no good corner by any stretch of the imagination, but... If Mills plays solid, if he plays good press, if he runs that route with him, stays right on his hip, I think it's going to be a long day for Mike Evans. I trust Jalen Mills. He's not going to get down on his confidence if he gets beat one or two times. But
that's what's awesome about this cornerback group, is they'll get beat on a double move for a touchdown,
and they're
going to
get right
back
up
and try to jump that pick.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think this is going to be a big test for him, and I'm confident that Mike Evans isn't going to have three touchdowns like he did in that one game in 2015, but... I'm not downplaying how good those receivers are for Tampa. That's a good trio for once. Chris Godwin is a legitimate heir to DeSean Jackson.
As much
position.
As I like the Eagles' corners, and I really do, I'm very high on the Eagles' secondary right now. If the pass rush isn't getting there, those guys are going to make plays regardless. It's just they're going to get yards, especially
throw
with
the ball
how
up to Mike Evans. He's 6 foot five.
Especially with how off the Eagles' corners play a lot of the time is. I mean, do you trust the Eagles if they're not getting it there? Do you trust them to then send the blitz and leave those corners in man-on-man sometimes with no safety help? Because you might have to if the pass rush isn't getting there, which I do trust they will. I think this is a strong matchup. I think this is an advantage for the Eagles' defensive line. But, I mean, then if you have to start blitzing to get to Fitzpatrick, that leaves the receivers with less guys to have to beat. So,
yeah, I mean, you still have to cover O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate somehow.
Yeah.
And if you have to blitz...
Cameron Brate's like the fifth receiving option.
And he's good.
Yeah, Cameron Brate's a solid tight end.
He's a very good tight end. O.J. Howard is 6'6" and can catch just about anything, so...
It's going to be a fun matchup, though, because, like, we're talking about how good Tampa Bay is, but, I mean, there's an eagle to match up with every single one of those guys. Darby on DeSean and Mills on Mike Evans and Nigel Bradham and Jordan Hicks are two of the best coverage linebackers in the NFL going up against O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. And
Bradham being back is a very good sign.
We saw how
team.
Good Jordan Hicks was last week, and now we're about to add another top five inside linebacker, at least coverage-wise. Probably overall. And Nigel Bradham is a top... If he's not top five, he's definitely top maybe seven.
He graded out like high.
He's one of the
coverage.
Best inside linebackers in football. The Eagles have two of them.
Yeah.
So that's going to be... I think this is going to be a very good game for the Eagles. I think the offense is going to bounce back, and I think the defense is going to be able to hold, because I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be on his butt a lot of the time in this game. And I trust the Eagles' corners against these weapons. Again, they're going to get their yards, but Tampa Bay, one of the keys is going to be, can they succeed in the red zone? Because Atlanta couldn't do it against the Eagles. The minute they got down there, the Eagles were on lockdown. Bend, don't break. They were not going to let them score on them. So a very interesting matchup on both sides of the ball. But I think the Eagles right now have the advantage.
Definitely. Just one quick thing I saw was in the run game, which I don't expect Tampa to impose their will in the run game by any stretch of the imagination, that when Michael Bennett was on the field, Atlanta averaged, I think, 6 or 6.1 yards a carry when he was off the field. But when he came on, they were averaging 3.4 yards a carry.
Michael Bennett had an underrated game.
Very underrated, people are not talking about.
Yeah. I mean, if you go back and watch the L-22, you'll see it. But just he wasn't getting any sacks. He wasn't making any pop plays. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Michael Bennett was really good.
When Fletcher Cox is getting doubled 50% of the time, you need those guys to make plays.
I think the defensive line is going to have a day against Tampa.
I really do. Yeah. I think this is like a 4 to 5 sack day.
I'm with you.
Hopefully a couple interceptions from the secondary.
That's the thing. It doesn't matter how much talent they have on offense. Fitzpatrick is Ryan Fitzpatrick. If he's getting hit and he's forcing plays, Darby and those aggressive corners, they're going to make plays on the ball. So I'm very confident in this one.
Yeah, this is the game that you know you are better than the other team.
Yeah.
You know all around, head to toe, that you have better skill, better coaching, better all-around play. Mm-hmm. You need to go out and impose your will on this team and just show them we are the Super Bowl champions for a reason.
Absolutely.
Don't play down to their level. Play sound defense. Make smart play calls on offense. Make smart decisions with the ball, and I really think it could be a really good day for this Eagles team.
That's a good way to wrap it up. So that's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, available as always on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Locked On Eagles. We will be back tomorrow with the crossover edition with Locked On Buccaneers as we continue our coverage of Eagles Buccaneers Week 2 this Sunday at 1 o'clock. Please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere you find podcasts, we're up and available. And of course, on LockedOnEagles.com. Got some good written stuff up there. Have an All-22 coverage of the Eagles secondary week one. Gino wrote a good piece about how the Eagles have found a way to close games since 2016, which, Gino, remember, they weren't able to close games back then, and just how crazy they've come, how far they've come in 2 years. So we got all that as well. LockedOnEagles.com. Please review the show, rate, comment, subscribe, anything to help out the pod. We really appreciate all the feedback that you guys have given us. Follow me on Twitter at DiBiase, L-O-E.
At Gino_L-O-E.
All right, and we'll be back tomorrow and then continuing throughout the week as the 1-0 Eagles take on the 1-0 Buccaneers this Sunday at 1 o'clock. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow. Go Birds!
Fly, Eagles, fly.